And welcome to the newest episode of Better 3D. I'm your host, Matthew James Grenier, and I'm here with the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, the person that is probably responsible for all that is right and wrong with your life. You have no idea. He pulls the strings behind the curtain. Bob McQueen.
Hey, Matt. I was just walking down the street. I haven't seen you in maybe 3 years. And
First of all, don't tell people that. They want to believe that we live in a firehouse together like the Ghostbusters.
It's funny you say that, because we're sitting across the street from a firehouse, and I love that idea, but also at the same time, like, our massive falling out that we continue to have every single time.
Okay, first of all, if you won't admit that Sisko is the best captain in Star Trek, you got a constant...
First of all, that's... Isn't he Admiral Sisko?
No, he never gets Admiral. He's the captain, and then he gets transported inside the wormhole. He's living there.
That's disappointing that I even said that, because it's the only Star Trek series I've ever finished from start.
Remember, he goes with this is a weird alien mom in the wormhole.
Yeah, you're right.
God, if you find it online, they made a documentary called What We Left Behind, or like what
it,
plot
no,
was going to be. It could have been such cool shit.
Yep.
Already off topic. Here we go. So, it's been a while since we put up, but this is going to be part one of me and Bob's the year so far, 2024, the movies we've seen, what we're talking about. And if you haven't listened to us a long time, we are the Midwest premier drinking movie podcast, because we're people with average IQs but above average delivers, because we're definitely not sober, we're definitely not experts. So, what are we drinking tonight, Robert?
Oh, we're drinking some Pabst Blue Ribbon.
You know
what even makes it even better is just... looking down at the cursive writing on the can that says "Established in Milwaukee, 1844," and we're sitting outside of Milwaukee. It's just perfect.
For everyone else to know, like, while you hear the background noise, we are outside at a patio at one of our favorite establishments. We've been here many times, the Dream Lab. It's the first time we recorded here since they moved across the street. Now they have this outdoor seating in beautiful Walker's Point. It is the end of June right now, so I don't know if I'll put this out, but it was a massive heat wave here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That broke, I guess, 2 hours ago?
Yeah.
Because it was like 90 this morning.
It really was.
It's 77 and gorgeous right now.
Yeah, the wind is blowing. It's perfect.
Perfect. So you will hear some background of the city, but that's how we roll in our style of podcasting.
Hopefully some gunshots.
I mean, it's Walker's Point. It's more likely a stabbing than a gunshot. But
you're right.
Yeah. We mess with blades around here. We're always prepared for the day we all become Highlanders. That's what we want to do. Just, you know, don't let your blade skills go lax, because all of a sudden you just won't be able to fight. But yes, we are across here from engine company number 3, which is a really cool place, restaurant, that has mediocre food. Actually, I'll tell you about this. I've been there many times. The food is actually always good, but I've always had the worst customer service there.
Oh.
To the point where, like,
yep.
I'd be like, I'm not going back. But it looks so cool.
It does look cool.
Hang out, the food's good, and it's always like, yeah, that's... like, I'm the kind of guy, like, as long as you, like, it's really hard for me to care about customer service. Like, I once got food on a dirty plate, and then I asked them to, like, I go, hey, and they go, oh. And then they waited, like, 30 minutes bringing me my new food, and then when I got, like, my silverware unwrapped, that was dirty. There was, like, lipstick on it. Like, what is happening? So.
That's terrible.
It was terrible, yeah. I've heard they've really turned around post-pandemic, but who knows. I had five times shame on me. Okay, I'm ready to just,
right.
So, and you were talking about the Pabst. Have you done the Pabst tour in town?
I have not done the Pabst tour. Oh. I didn't know there was a Pabst tour.
So the old Pabst facility still sits there. It's like a historic landmine. There's a group of people who bought it.
It's lofts now, right?
Well, like across the street, but the actual like brewing facility is still there. And like it's like a tap room. They do tours. They walk through it. It's super cool. They have like an outdoor pavilion. And you can like drink Pabst and it's all people that used to work there and stuff. And like so, like
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's the Pabst Museum. It's a museum tour. It's just not a working brewery anymore. But you go through all like the building, like the architecture and things they had there, because it was such a historic building. It's kind of still there, and you can rent it out for weddings and things like that. It's super cool.
There was a photographer that released two books a long time ago. He actually snuck into. I don't know. No, I think he got permission to go into the old Pabst Brewing and the Schlitz Factory.
Yeah, yeah.
And he released these two gorgeous coffee table books. I'll have to look it up. I'm sorry, listeners, for those of you that want these books.
I mean, you probably could Google, like...
But it was before they even brought in the lofts. So okay. It was, like, the entire abandoned factories, because they used to be big for urban explorers.
Yeah.
And these coffee table books, because I worked at Barnes & Noble, they came with the actual labels off bottles, because he found all unused labels.
I like that.
Sitting in the factory, and he included them in the books, and they were beautiful, and I really wanted them. I have a friend that actually purchased them, but for those of you that are hunting for sort of like some of that like Brewerania stuff, that like abandoned factories of yesteryear that happened involved in making the great ambrosia that is beer.
Yeah.
They're great.
Well, that's what we do. I did it last summer with my buddy. We'll do it sometime this summer. We're gonna go. It's relatively cheap. You get a few beers. You get to drink. But I mean, it's like the people who run it who do it because they have like a tap. They have a couple tap rooms in there going all the time. There's beer happening. There's food served there. Like to be so dedicated to Pabst that you like buy the rights to like have a museum about it.
Yeah.
Like the people are in there are on it. So that's what's happening. As far as the rest of the crew. Mike is in Missouri doing a live stream for Precious Memories Figurines. That is not a lie. I usually make some kind of joke about what he's doing.
He's doing what?
So the Precious Memories Figurines.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess he's doing like a live stream for the company. I don't... His job has gotten so weird. I love the fact that he does like, oh, I'm working for the beep, I'm working for this, I'm working for that, I'm doing this. Like sometimes it's like a local music video, and all of a sudden it's like something high-end, and all of a sudden it's something like that. Like, what is happening there? So that's where Michael is. Paul, as always, is just being Paul. Just like I feel like now is he not busy? He's probably just sitting across the street, like watching us do it. Like just to be obstinate. And Allison and Molly, they're wild salons that you can't rein in. If they show up and they show up, and they don't, you know.
Yeah. What's the Rolling Stones song? Wild Horses.
Yeah.
Wait, that doesn't apply.
That does not apply.
It does. It doesn't work. I just really dropped
so
the ball
okay.
on that one.
I wasn't let it slide. It's okay. So
oh, real fast. I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah,
Paul Bialas. Paul Bialas is the photographer
there we go. Okay.
for those books. So sorry for that, listeners.
And it's fantastic. So we're gonna kind of go through like the movies we've seen this year. I don't ahead of time. So Bob has been seeing movies like it's his goddamn job. I'm proud of him. This is probably one of the least amount of years like for this late in the year, for like just half of the year that I've, like usually this point I've seen like 30 movies. I see a lot of movies. We get the number at 17, which is low for Matt, high for most people. I'll be honest, I feel like I've been watching a lot more TV this year.
You are directly the fault for Furiosa failing.
I went and saw it. I brought people.
You haven't
seen
it. I
went to Screen X, which I'm going to talk about when we talk about this. Like, I went for it. I just feel like this year in general, like man, usually there's big budget movies I want to see, and there's like indie movies I want to see. There's really very few where I was like, I got to see this movie. Like, because usually I go see a movie that I really want to see, and then I end up seeing three movies at once. Like, that's why my number's always, hey, it's like,
yeah.
I'm going to go see Furiosa.
I do
and
the
also
same.
See, like, four movies. And this year was, like, even when I walked, I was like, ugh, I don't know what I want to see. You know, like, but we'll get into it. There's some good stuff. There's some mediocre stuff. There's some bad stuff. We're going to talk about it all. This will be part one of it. I'll let you pick what you want to talk about first, whatever movie you want to.
Yeah, so let me start with, I'm just gonna go with it. I'm not sure when you're dropping this pod. I know you've already said that. I'm sorry to
probably
be repetitive.
Probably the first week of July.
But I just wanted to give it some support because it was a big surprise for me. Ultraman Rising.
Okay.
Ultraman Rising is such a fucking beautiful movie. It competes up there with a lot of the animated movies that are getting nominated today, like Into the Spider-Verse. It's graphically beautiful. The animation is just so fucking beautiful. The story is beautiful about, which I found some connection to, even though I don't get along with my dad. It's about, you know, fathers and sons, and...
I always thought you didn't have a dad. I thought you were like Anakin Skywalker and Jesus, just... Imagine, like, that's where I've always kept you.
You know, what's his face? Ian, the guy that plays, Emperor? Ian.
Oh,
Ian, the old white guy,
yeah, yeah.
The old British white guy.
Yeah.
Fuck it, I used to be a Star Wars fan. I can't believe I forgot that.
Yeah.
He came over to my mom and he put midichlorians in her, and that's how I made.
That's how exactly. That and the Holy Ghost.
That and the Holy Ghost. Yeah.
God, out of all your like satanic talk, would it really fun if you were like. If anyone who would accidentally be, like, the next Jesus, it was you, like, that makes me so happy. Like, I've heard you say, like, there's no religion, hail Satan a million times, and it's like, oh, no, you're the son of God.
Yeah. I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. Just you, you know, just reading a comic book. Wait, what's happening?
He's reading a comic book, and you're really like, soccer.
So, Ultraman.
Yeah, Ultraman Rising. It's just this beautiful story about fathers and sons and trying to come into your inheritance and also, like, getting over your own ego and what you contribute to just like a family being not just your direct family but also a family of because the main character Ken Sato, he's also like the best baseball player in the world. So he leaves California and he goes to Tokyo, the Tokyo Giants, and he's getting over his own ego for that.
Oh, so he's like retired?
No. He leaves MLB to go play in the Japanese leagues.
I mean, I can follow a flying man in a suit, but like, you stay in MLB, you don't go to Japan. That's not how it works.
But their baseball is almost better. It competes on the level of MLB. So
it's adorable you say that. It doesn't, and the money's not the same. Like,
Shohei Ohtani.
He came here. I'm saying you don't.
The money's better here, of course.
I'm saying you don't take a pay cut.
But
saying the baseball, the fever's for the. Oh my god, go watch.
But Ultraman
Mexico,
is distinctly a Japanese product,
oh, for sure.
Right?
Yes.
So I got a question about this.
Yeah. I know very little about Ultraman. It's always the thing I've always wanted to dive into. Like, there was a movie a couple years ago that was like Shin Ultraman.
Fucking amazing.
I've heard nothing. And there's also a comic run like 3 years ago that's supposed to be amazing. It's been like one of those things. Like one day I'm like in my background. Like, one day I'm gonna go deep in Ultraman. People I respect who know what I like is like, oh yeah, you like this. Like, is this a good jumping on point for new people?
Yes, yeah, it's
okay.
Completely accessible. Yeah, you don't have to know anything about Ultraman.
So like, I want to kind of watch it, hoping this like sparks and then I go, because I heard Shin Ultraman's really good, and I heard that run they're doing. Like, I think it's still going. The book they're doing is just fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, he's crossing over with Avengers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Kyle Higgins, who really made a name for himself writing Mighty Morphin Power Rangers comics for Boom Studios, mm-hmm. he jump shipped over to Marvel, and he wrote three separate Ultraman series.
Okay.
The fourth one is Ultraman and Avengers that's coming out.
So is it set in...
No, it's Marvel.
So it's not IDW. It's
Marvel. Yep.
It's always weird. Marvel takes like properties and they like, integrate them, and then they auto-integrate like Conan or the Transformers or Doctor Who or Star Trek for a while. Do I have a Star Trek X-Men crossover from Marvel? Sure, because they had the rights to it.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Mark Silvestri was the artist on
that. Yeah, it was great. And like then like when they lose his properties, like oh like the one that is for me, it's always rough is Conan because he's been in it so many times. Like, he led the Savage Avengers like a few years ago, like. And I was like, who is this guy? I don't know what's going on. Yeah. So, it's strange, but yes. So you liked it overall.
Ultraman Rising, it got a 5 stars out of me. It's just, I think the biggest crime, and I'll kind of leave it here, is because there's a train, is I think the biggest crime is that even though it's on Netflix, it's readily accessible to everybody. And they're trying to get... they're trying to get it more popular so that it can lead to a sequel because it ends on such a cliffhanger.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not such a cliffhanger. Like, it ends, but also, like, there's more to the story. And they're trying... The more popular it gets on Netflix, the bigger it's going to be. So I just want to say, like, the biggest crime is not being able to see it in the theater because it is just so colorful and so gorgeous.
I will say this right now. Netflix's animation... their Netflix, their movies are fine. They never make horrible things, but they oscillate from like C to B minus. They don't really go. It's very rarely I'm watching on like Netflix and like, I'm not mad I saw it, but it's like, it's not, yeah, there's, you should be on streaming, you know?
Yeah.
They're anime, like Monona last year, and Sea Beast, and what's that? Like the Christmas one was Santa Claus. Pinocchio was inclusive. Like,
yeah.
Their animation film wise is great, and I like also their animation shows. Master Universe Revelation, that was great.
Dude, that was good stuff.
Good stuff.
That was good stuff.
The Dragon Prince is really great. Like, that side of Netflix does well.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll get some hit shows. I mean, we'll get Orange and Black.
You'll get some hit movies.
But, like, their movies in general, like, at least the... Well, like,
some of the movies are real shit.
The only couple that I really, really liked was, like, Old Guard. I love that one.
Sure.
But that was based on a graphic novel, like, pretty much. So, like, you know, but, like... In general, like, I don't find Netflix movies, okay, but, like, their animation. So I'm going to watch it. That's what I'm going to do. And the, like, you were saying, like, how it kind of ends on a cliffhanger, and then it, like, it, but it could end. It's going to roll into my first movie, because I know we both saw it. I'm going to say Doom Part 2. I'm going to say right now, I know, I hate that it's going to sound, this, you're the same boat as I am. A little bit older. We've liked nerdy things for a long time.
Yeah.
So when it's something, like, I've liked my whole life finally becomes huge, I hate, like, I sound like a 22-year-old, like, nerd on the internet who, like, just rediscovered. I've read all these books when I was in my teenager.
Yeah.
So don't act like I'm jumping a bandwagon when I say this is my favorite movie of the year so far. It is. I'm just right now, mostly because I have not seen a lot, and because same way that I years ago when the Avengers movie came out, the original Avengers movie, I go, "Here's my favorite movie of the year," and I even said, "Yeah, there are better movies, but like, fucking young Matt wanted this so bad, like sure. so like, and this was by far the closest I've ever seen to a Dune adaptation that meshed with what I saw in my brain and felt genuine and felt like on the same level. I love Danny DeVito. I loved Arrival. I love Sicario. I love everything he's done. Blade Runner 2049, love.
Yeah, it's so like, fucking amazing.
So like, he just keeps, for me.
So let me ask you real fast, Matt, because you're talking about reading the books, and the books, like, I highly consider that very first book to be one of the greatest masterpieces of sci-fi literature.
Okay.
Just the first one. Okay. And but as a fan of the books and what you're talking about, as a fan of Dune in general, how do you feel about like some of the backlash that maybe some of the hardcore Dune fans came to it with, specifically with the lack of the Spice Guild in the part two?
This is what I'm gonna say right now. I feel like we're gonna get there if we keep making the movies. So like, it's one of these things where like, it's like the Harry Potter books, which I didn't read, but I get when people get upset because like, later on it kind of comes back. Oh, you've read the earlier books, they had in there. Would I have liked to have seen it? Sure. They are, but mostly exposition and plot devices in those that first book. Like we learn about him, we need to know about him because he knows later on is he more of a thing. But I feel like we got the gist. When after this movie was successful, they're showing pictures of what he becomes, the worm. Like why? Because, well, you didn't realize like the spice, the navigation guild were like fish people already. Like it's not crazy that spice doesn't matter. Like we obviously saw the eyes shake blue, but like yeah, if you really expose yourself to spice, there's physical changes along with it. You know, like that kind of stuff. So I didn't hate it because I think the director wanted to make a trilogy, and that trilogy was going to be just the first two books. And the goal is just to do those first two books. You don't really need to put those in there too much, except explaining why spice is important and what they use it for, which he does. Like, and really, it's you know, it is the more deep story. It's Paul's story. You know, like, that's what he's doing. He's telling the story of a villain, and he must explain it in great detail. And I love the fact that, like, so many people did not get, like, the weird, like, first week, you know, like, reaction. Like, people like, this is so bad. Like no, you, like, it's the people who don't understand, like, the boys is, like, making fun of them, right? Like it was shocking when people like, oh, it's a white saber complex. Like, yeah, that's the point.
He tells
everyone right away, like, and so much that Frank Herbert had to do that in the first book. That's why he broke Dune Messiah. Because some people like didn't get like, no, he's told you this whole time, it's all lies. That if he's gonna do this, people will die. Doing this is a bad thing. He does it anyway, and he knows it's gonna be bad anyway. And like, yeah, so that proves that he was the problem. No, that's not what it means. You literally fell the trap that he's trying to do in his book. So I like that in there. I feel most of the hardcore fans didn't care the omissions of some of those side things. Because I just don't think they're gonna go. I mean, obviously, commerce, capitalism, if they can make a bunch of money, they'll keep going. But it's such an undertaking.
And it is. It is massive.
And like he says, he's only doing three. That's all he wants. That's all he ever wanted to do. Like he's so successful with these movies. Like I just do what I want. I want to make three movies because for him, those are the two books that make sense to him.
Yeah.
I personally like Children of Dune a lot. I really think it's a great end to that movie, like in a good way, like a weird turn that makes sense to me. It shows like the karma of what he did, and then as far as the second, because I always put them those as one trilogy, one trilogy, they all go together. For me, I enjoy God Emperor Dune, but the next two books are tough.
I think for me personally, yeah. Like where, and maybe I speak for others, but like where I have a hard time with Dune is, even though I love that first book, yeah. And I truly do.
It is, for me, the stars of the six books is Dune, Children of Dune, are by far, like, ever get, like, you know, A tier, S tier, those are S tier books.
Right.
I would say Dune Messiah and God of Doom are A, and the rest are all kind of C, they're Ds.
Yeah.
Like, they're not terrible, they're weighted with, like, they're so big, they're so, there's good pieces in them, but he gets kind of wrapped up in his own, like, smell his own farts a little bit. Like, yeah. Like you can, like he could use a better editor in those last chapter.
He's farting into the fan sitting on his desk.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think where the issue that I have with it is like there's so much talk about like a lot of the people like referring to Paul Muad'Dib as the villain arc, but like he sets him, Frank Herbert sets him so up to like, you want this guy to save this planet.
Yes.
And if he doesn't, like, if you remove the fact, so, like, what you said just now is that it's a villain story. If you remove Paul Atreides from that equation, then you just have the worst villains, which is the Harkonnens.
Yes.
And the Spice Guild and the Emperor. And at the same time, I do like the fact, and I do really appreciate the fact, that Frank Herbert's just like, question your saviors.
Yes.
Question your saviors, because
it's an indictment of organized religion, charismatic leaders. It's like it's idea. The idea is like, hey, you can have a leader or a cause or a belief and rally behind it, but don't blindly follow it. Because like, if Dune would end with like somehow where he could have saved just that planet,
yeah,
then he's a hero. But he knew to save that planet. Hey, I know this is gonna be a hot take, but starting a war that's going to kill billions of people for revenge for your father to save him. Like, in the math of the world, the universe, he did a bad thing.
Yeah.
And he knew that it was because he can do the math, and he saw, like, not just in that one war, for, I think, to the end of that, it's 10,000 years, spoilers, I guess, the six books take 10,000 years. It doesn't, like, the redemption for that family, where the universe is finally set right, is 10,000 years of suffering. Not just like a war that kills a bunch of people. Not just like this like war. It is 10,000 years of suffering and oppression and awful things that he does. But because he sees the math, the golden path, yes, eventually he does come up the other side. And the argument you should have with yourself is like, is that worth it? It's like if hey, you know, like in like, hey, if I told you if you were doing a thing that years of stretching would make it better, is that worth it? Like something that we don't know the answer to. Like, you know, we bombed Japan, and obviously that's not World War II, is like that. But like, if we knew like hundreds of years ago, like that little ripple that goes down that makes it better, like better for the world. If you could see that, would you think that's okay? Because you still did a horrible, awful thing. You know, like most people say, no, like you still did this horrible, monstrous thing. You got to be judged by in your time. I like that argument. I like what's going on in the thing.
Sure.
I like the. That's why I love the books, because it's.
So let me ask you one other question, because I know we've been talking about it for a while, and it's a really good discussion, because it is a very good movie.
Yes.
It's an extremely good movie. I think...
We've been talking about the books a lot more, not the movie, yeah.
Well, I think for me, I've kind of, like, initially after seeing it, I was like, okay, yeah, this is great, but I've kind of dialed it back a little bit, and thinking, like, it's very good. I don't know that I would call it great. I don't want to take that away from any Dune fan. But let me ask you, I'm sorry, I'm very bad with names, but Zendaya's character.
Yeah. Oh, first of all, if there's any book series we don't know anyone's name, Chani's her name. But, like, everyone's got six names. They all kind of sound alike. So, like, I get it. Like,
yeah, so Zendaya's
character. The only one you always remember is Duncan Idaho, because it's bizarre. And the rest are like, yeah, like, it's crazy. Her character, so they change her dramatically.
Yeah, because in the book, she was very much on board with Paul.
So here's
and in this movie, she's very just, she keeps standing there questioning him, like, dude, you're fucking nuts.
Because here's the thing, why I think this happened. Two of these reasons. Like, he made a lot of changes. I feel like he kept the core essence, which I think an adaptation should not be one for one telling. There's no way you can make that books one for one. And people who think they want that, go watch the cycle they did in the 90s with, what's his name? The comedic actor from Wedding Crashers.
Owen Wilson?
The other guy. Vince Vaughn. Go watch Vince Vaughn's, which I believe was done by Gus Van Sant. They did Psycho again, and they literally did a shot-for-shot remake. And it's unwatchable. Like, it's like, this is not what you want. You don't want a direct girl. You want an imitation. So I think two things. He was never really sure he was going to get to do all three books. All three movies. So he made it in a way, just kind of like we were talking about, where if that movie ends there, and we don't go to see it anymore, it's fine. And also, there's another chapter going on, but I got that story. He got his revenge or whatever. I got that story. And it makes him be more of a real hero. He doesn't have villains later on. Like he's still a hero. In the face of, like, knowing that, I think he's like, hey, I need to do what... Dune Messiah was a book that kind of corrected the audience's reaction to the first book. He made a book in response, like, people didn't get the point. So we weren't sure we're going to get that or not. Let's make Chani be that person who's, like, pointing it out to you what you're supposed to know, because, like, it's a subtle story. And because I think, especially as Americans, we are taught, indoctrinated, to always believe in, like, the figure, the hero, the founding father,
right.
Superman. Like,
yep.
we're, one person in charge, we follow them.
Specifically to the American audience.
American audience. I think other audiences would get it, and I think because he's a French director, he gets it. Like, why? But I think it says American audience, but like, no, I need to point this out. I need a voice that says, who very plainly says, this is wrong. Even our hero, who's saying the whole time he's wrong. Like we are meant to be, no, he was wrong. The cause was right. That is, like, what we want to believe in America. I don't know why this, but it's how we've been instilled.
Yeah.
Like, our patriotism is, like, kind of sickly in every part of our DNA.
It's awful.
Yes. Well, because it's a powerful weapon that people can use and mobilize us all the time and make us do stupid, horrible things. And we just fall for it again and again and again. We're not going to get into politics right now. That's not this podcast. Because I feel like if we talk about it without Kenny, he'd be really upset about us. Like, we're going to real deep dive what's going on over a certain place in the world. We're not, that's not this podcast. But, so I think that's why she's like that. They do some changes. Like, you know, in the book, they lose a kid. That's why her vengeance.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why she jumps with him. Like, you get her vengeance. He's got vengeance for his father, but she wants vengeance for her son. Like, that's why it makes sense in the book why she just goes with him.
Yeah.
So they don't, that's why they purposely take that out. So she can be the voice of reason. I think in the next movie, she'll come on board. I think she's pregnant right now. I think that's what's going to bring out. Like, they're like, they change that back, you know. Like, in the books, like, his sister kills the dude, the Harkness.
Yeah.
Like, they change quite a bit, but it makes sense for this adaptation. How can I tell the core story that makes sense in these two movies? I think, like the books always give freedom.
So two more comments.
Yeah.
Two more comments about Dune 2, because we could make a whole podcast.
I mean, we have a whole podcast about this. We did that. Especially the reason why you said it's a good movie, a great movie. The reason I think it's a great movie is I think the cinematography is amazing.
It's very good.
I think
good.
It's some, the art direction, the costuming, the music. I mean, Hans Zimmer. I mean, he knows what he's doing. Like, so much of, like, all the things that technically is like, this is a well-made art, off the scale.
I just wanted to clarify, though.
Yeah.
The worm juice. We're all on board with that being blue raspberry flavor, right?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, it's...
Because
you're not turning down blue raspberry.
No, God, no. If it's not blue raspberry, like, what could possibly be? I mean, it's blue. It's blue raspberry.
Worm juice is unequivocally blue raspberry. It's the unicorn of flavors.
I mean, I don't know what meth tastes like, but it could be meth. It's got that Breaking Bad kind of look to it a little bit. Like,
you're right.
So, I mean, I don't know what that tastes like, but if it tastes like that, I would love it. Disappointment. Actually, maybe it's more like meth because it does get you.
And finally, I promise, this is the last thing I'm saying, because I know I've extended this conversation far longer. I just find it hugely disappointing that Denny Villeneuve did not have a pug strapped to somebody's chest the way David Lynch had Patrick Stewart charging into battle with a pug strapped to his chest.
Oh, okay, I'll take that. That's fine.
I just missed opportunity.
Like, or at the very least, like, let's say, like, before, like they're doing that scene in where they're doing the battle sequence, if someone was just holding a pug, like, and, like, petting it, that would have been enough for everyone else. Like, we get it. That's a nod. He really wanted no connection to that movie. I don't think he's a classy guy.
I love that movie.
A classy director.
I love it.
I don't think he's ever going to be like, that's shit, you know? But you don't, like, what, as soon as you blank checks, you pick a thing that's already been done, and you don't acknowledge it, that's because you hate that thing. He's classy enough to be like, he must have read those books, loved them, saw the movie, like, this is bullshit, I hate it, but I'm going to, if I get power enough, I'm going to, like, erase it from the memory of society, is what he's trying to do. Like, there's very few, like, so, like, but he's not going to say it. I mean, you don't think he's asked 1,000 times? I've seen interviews. Oh, did you, like, oh, yeah, I'm aware of that. Yeah, I saw, as a child, I saw, he's always something like, oh, as a kid, I've watched that movie many times. He never says he likes it or hates it. He's a classy man. So, either way. Let's go on to your next
movie. All right, so next movie. So I'm going to pick one that I fucking hate.
Okay, I love when you
All right, I'm going to, I fucking hate this movie.
Okay.
All right, and let me just set it up, though, so I've got to explain how I saw this movie. So, in our area in Wisconsin, we have Marcus Movie Theaters.
Yes, we do.
And this past summer, at the start of summer, maybe at the end of spring, they started a $5 Mystery Movie Monday.
Mystery Movie Monday.
It's $5. You have no idea what the fuck you're seeing.
It's a fun...
Which is great. It's great. I take an edible. I get a beer. I go in not knowing what the fuck I'm going to see. And I set rules for myself. I take an edible. I get a beer, which I just explained.
Yeah.
But I have to sit through it.
Yeah.
You got to sit through it. And this one, I was so close to walking out of.
Yeah, I've only walked out two movies in my life. I don't something about me buying a ticket, even if I hop in. They made art. It might be terrible, but
This one is not fucking art.
I'm sorry, but I will give them respect to finish, and then I'll shoot the shit out of it. Only twice in my life I've walked out of movies, and in hindsight, I wish I would never done that. Because like, I've never walked out. Yeah. Okay, what's this movie?
This movie is called Summer Camp.
Oh, really?
Summer Camp, directed by Castiel Landon.
Yeah.
It stars the worst actor, one of the worst actors in the history of actors, Diane Keaton, Kathy Bates, and Alfred Woodward. Also starring Eugene Levy, Beverly D'Angelo, who's in there.
Okay, I was saying, there was a movie that came out last year, that was like Summer Camp, it was like about a musical camp or something like that. This ain't it.
No, this is not it.
Is this like a weird, is it kind of be like the mighty, is it like Best in Show? It's supposed to be funny in that weird way?
No, it's basically, and forgive me, I'm not trying to condemn anybody, but it's boomer comedy.
Sometimes.
Did you go see
80 for Brady? No, you did.
Which one?
80 for Brady last year?
No.
So that's been a thing for a while. Like, ever since the Bucket List decided, hey, we're gonna every year is like boomer comedy. They have these like old people together. Like they had the one where Morgan Freeman and then like robbed the bank or something like that.
Oh, sure.
Last year they had like Diane Keaton and a couple like three other like older ladies who are in their 80s.
I fucking hate Diane Keaton.
Did a movie called 80 for Brady, where they all wanted to go see Tom Brady's last, game. It was a whole thing. It was a road trip comedy. You'll see Tom Brady play.
Oh, Jane Fonda was in that.
Jane Fonda's in this, yes, yeah. So, okay, it's not that, but it's like that kind of shit.
No, so it's basically this boomer retrospective on going to summer camp when you're a kid, and everything is all fucking, bullies, and Beverly D'Angelo, I'll give her credit, because she was, like, the clique, the popular chick. In the summer camp, and I enjoyed her banter on there.
Can I take a wild, I'm going to judge them on their physicality? I think she's even hotter in Vegas Vacation than she was younger. You know, she was a smoke show early on. Something about, cougar version of her in Vegas Vacation when she's, probably 41.
Yeah.
The hottest.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah,
she's always been a beautiful woman. Something about that where she's, wearing a gold dress and a Wade Newton really hits all my things. This is it. This is what I want.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So it's just about how these three stupid girls meet at the summer camp and they decide to become lifelong friends.
Okay.
And except, Diane Keaton plays the nerdy little chick who grows up to have eight doctorates and she works in some blood field, some DNA field. I don't know what the fuck she does. One's a nurse and Kathy Bates plays the selfish headstrong. I love Kathy Bates. But she's the selfish, headstrong, self-help guru, okay? And she's popular. She rents out the camp. She pays millions of dollars to bring everybody that was at the summer camp back to summer camp as their boomers.
Yeah.
Because she's sad because she can't spend time with her friends. So she forces everybody to come back to camp so they can reclaim their youth.
Oh, for the record, when I become 80 and ultra-rich... I'm gonna make all the members of Horrorgasm come back for a thing that I rent out, just to force you guys to show back up.
That's not a bad idea.
It's gonna happen.
It's gonna be idea.
I'm gonna run a retrospective of The Shining at the movie theater, and I'm gonna rent it out and I'm gonna make you guys come back. That's gonna happen.
You're not making me. I'm already agreeing to this. I like this idea, but no, this movie is a fucking pile of shit. An absolute pile of shit. I was cringing. I said, it was the last time I got this close to walking out of a fucking movie was Jurassic World, which I fucking despise.
Jurassic World?
I've not seen the rest of them because the first one was so fucking bad.
I'm saying, I've seen all three because I'm a glutton for punishment. I want you to see the other two now to realize the other one was.
No.
If I'm ranking all, just general, let's say I never saw any of the Jurassic Parks, but I can see that first. I consider Jurassic World a C-. The next two are hard Fs. I want you to how worse they've gotten, right? Because I can watch Jurassic World for there's dinosaurs running around. I can sit through.
Can you imagine?
I can eat a bunch of popcorn just for an hour and a half and have a good time. You know?
Can you imagine if Colin Trevorrow had actually directed a Star Wars movie? As bad as the Star Wars movies are, Can you imagine if he actually got his hands on a Star Wars movie?
Yeah.
But anyways, like I won't spend long on summer camp.
She hated it.
Yeah, it's okay, she comes to realization that she's selfish and that she needs to be more
like
responsible.
Right before she dies.
I thought it was coming. I thought that angle was coming. It never does. Mm. I don't care about spoilers. If you're seeing this movie and you enjoy this movie, I don't yuck someone else's yum. But this movie is a fucking pile of shit.
Okay, I 100% will not see that one. One I know that we both saw that's on my list, because you saw Dune Part 2. No, one we both saw. The one that I'm like, every once in a while I get an interview that like sticks with me all night is, I saw the TV Glow.
Yes.
Loved it.
Yes.
A24 film. And I feel like this is very, this is a movie for three types of people. I'm a cinephile, and I like good
yes.
movies.
Yes, yep.
I'm in the queer community, mostly a trans person, but anyone in the queer community with that, or I grew up watching Are You Afraid of the Dark or Goosebumps. Like, I watched teenage...
Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yeah, that too. But I almost feel like this movie is supposed to be a little bit less than. It's supposed to be for, like, the tween version. Like, did you watch Are You Afraid of the Dark? Did you watch Goosebumps?
I disagree. I feel like this is more hardcore for the Buffy fans. So much so that the Pink Opaque show, when they're watching it, the font that's used in the Pink Opaque is the same font for the credits in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
It's also the same font that's in Goosebumps. All three of them use the same font. I just thought because they're basically doing Are You Afraid of the Dark. That's the show they're watching, Pink Opaque. That's what that is, you know? Either way, the 8 to 16-year-old, you know, like, we like weird horror stuff. Like, I really thought it reminded me of Are You Afraid of the Dark. It was like this weird show. Just because it was more, like, kid-friendly than it was, like, Buffy. But either way, I'm okay with that analogy, too. Those are three audiences for it. I went and go into it with... I had no idea except for, like, a written synopsis. That's how much, like, I saw. I was like, oh, like, because I went to go see another movie, and I was like, what's also playing? Because I wanted to see that in Babes. The Babes was playing later, so I read the synopsis, which does not give you anything.
It doesn't.
So I'm like, I'll go see it's an A24 movie. I'll go see it. Blew me away.
Yeah.
I don't... Okay, should we try not spoil, or should we say spoiler and just gonna spoil it right now?
I don't know that you can really spoil this movie, and I hate using that term because
the thing I don't want to even give like a little bit away, because like I feel like what's so great about this movie is like it's such a bizarreness that you're walking. It's like watching a dream at some point, you know, which is the point. Which so the first 35 minutes, like I'm like, is this a good movie? Or is this like not a good movie? Like, oh no, it's a really, really, really good movie that they are frustrating you in the beginning and the end of it for a reason. It has a payoff. But I guess the I will give the synopsis that they gave you. Other goes that there is these two. It's set in the 90s, first of all, which I think is great because it's like kind of an homage to those shows from the 90s. And there's these two kids, this young woman who is probably, I think she's a freshman in high school at the time, or is this a sophomore in high school?
I think she's a junior, a sophomore, and he's the freshman.
Yeah, I think he's a freshman, he's in eighth grade, yeah. I think he's in high school, he's about to be, either way.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of an age difference, and he's a lonely kid hanging out with his mom, and she's a lonely, kind of like, outcast. And they kind of bond over this show called The Pink Opaque, which is like I said, it's like either Buffy or Arthur Dark. It's like this weird sci-fi meant for tweens.
Yeah, it's not. Let me just clarify. It's not either or. It's for that audience that experienced that when
yes.
they grew up.
Yes. So I'm saying like it's like you would, and they're watching and liking, and they have this weird friendship, and it's all told from like this. It's got a voiceover. It's told like he's telling us a story, and I don't want to call this movie a horror movie.
No.
Yeah, it's got some weird creepiness to it. And it's not a sci-fi movie, I don't think.
No.
Dark fantasy would be the closest thing, but even that feels weird. When I can't even get a title of what it is. But, like, he's telling a story about his life. And every once in a while, are there some weird, like, supernaturally type of shit happening occasionally in the peripheral? Later in the movie happens more so. But it kind of happens every once in a while. And you don't know if he's just crazy. Maybe he's making it up because he's telling you a story. And it's this weird friendship they have. And then the one character girl, like, runs away at some point and disappears and kind of reappears in his life later on. And she asks him, does she remember the story? Like, something like it doesn't exist anymore. Like, you can't find it anywhere. Like, this show does not exist, and we bonded over it. And, like, it's like their weird connection. I don't give too much away.
So, what I love about this movie
is
how subjective it is.
Yeah, 100%.
And how the viewer, like, you and I being viewers here just talking about it, digest it, right?
So I want to tell the ending real quick.
And you and I have digested it differently, and neither one of us is fucking wrong.
I love that little movie. It's 100%.
And for me personally, where I'm looking at it is like, you brought up a good point. Like, what do I call it? Is it a dark fantasy? What? Honestly, I feel it's a drama. For me personally, sure. And I'm only speaking myself, is like,
if it didn't have those aspects in it,
I feel it's like a metaphorical drama about depression.
Oh, it's
about
100%.
Teenage depression.
It's about the trans
which
community.
Leads right exactly, yeah. And it leads right into sort of the ending that you wanted to.
So like, it's
spoilers.
Okay, I don't want to give it too much away. I mean, I won't give that the plot point that changed it, but just in general, and I also want to say the two actors are fantastic in it.
Oh yeah.
I was not expecting that. But it has like a lot of themes going on. Like, a lot of it's about apathy. It's a lot about like, would you accept misery and depression for security and balance? Like this is what I know. I'll be like someone who struggled a long time coming out of the closet, I knew what that struggle was, like pain was, but it was better just to be somewhat unhappy with like this portion of my life than the unknown of what it would be to go the other side.
Absolutely.
Like this would just like the fear of destroying everything I know and love and has been my whole life, and this movie is actual stakes. Like, hey, the one character just like is like trying to get this person to wake up. Like, this is what needs to happen. Because once again, there's some weird trippy interdimensional kind of things. I don't want to talk too much about it, but also like it's super grounded in reality, so you don't really know. Because this character, she could just be crazy, and that's what he thinks. But then also he sings up, and he's also heavily medicated. And she's like, no, you're not crazy yourself. That is the way this is keeping you, like, is it just all in their heads? Like, if at some point we were revealed that it was all in their heads, it would not shock me.
Right.
I truly believe that it is real. The whole thing is real. Everything we saw was real. But the real question was, at the end, because the character does not make a choice. You don't see him make a choice. Does he make a choice to stay in that fantasy world and basically die, slow death? Or does he leave and go, because like, he walks out of that Chuck E. Cheese, basically finally completely understanding what's like, accepting what is he's been told this whole time. Does he go to that area? Does he dig that grave? Does he try to get out himself? Or does he just like, oh, no, I'm because he has that look, like it's like he's already gonna, like, gonna lie to himself one more time.
And that's what's so beautiful about this movie, because it's life, right?
Yes.
Because it's life, because you don't know what's coming in the future.
The masterstroke of this record not giving us any...
Jane Schoenbrunn.
Yeah.
Jane Schoenbrunn.
And like, let up to the audience to decide. Because I was really walking out with people I didn't work with, but they were all, like, arguing. No, he went, he figured it out, he's leaving. And they were like, no, he figured it out and went back. What was your personal opinion? Do you think he...
So my personal opinion is, if he leaves with her,
yeah,
it's suicide. Like, that's directly the metaphor for suicide.
That's what you think it's
because she's...
That she's dead?
That... I don't think she's dead. I think she wants to be. I think she's so miserable because she can't be comfortable with who she is, and she finds...
So you don't think any of that, the special effect-y kind of thing was real? Like, this is a reality-based thing?
Yeah.
So I went the other way. I do think it is...
And that's why this movie's so fucking good.
But I went to the first three-fourths movie. I didn't. I thought maybe it was, like, all in their head. I kind of went the other way around. And then is that him going crazy at the end? That with the things he's seeing, like he wants it so bad.
I think
he wants to be special in a way that
I can't. I think it's the depression anxiety, right?
Yeah, that's
so
100%
it's
would be
the depression. He wants to die.
Yeah.
But the anxiety, he's too afraid to do it himself.
That is totally like legitimate. I think it is a supernatural, like a
for sure
real, but he still decides at the end, even though he's crying for help. He knows he needs to get out. He knows he can't breathe. When he walks the door, he's going to go right back there again the next day until he finally dies. He keeps that slow death.
Yeah.
I love this because it's got so many, like it's got all these metaphors of suicide, depression, feeling like you don't belong, this pushing against the wall, but also like, I loved it so much. I was not expecting, especially halfway through the movie. I'm like, all right, it's okay. I'm liking it. It's a slow build to excellence is something you don't see very often.
No.
A lot of times you get like, oh yeah, you might be 20, 30 minutes in, then it gets there, and you try to ride that, and maybe it goes. This is like, literally like, if you watch 1 minute, you're like, oh, it's a scene. And it slowly, like, it's so rare that the best scene of a movie is the last scene.
Yeah.
A lot of times the last scene is the button, it's the punchline, it is like the epilogue. Like, we get the screen scene, and then it's like, oh, this one character, like, very rarely it's like, this was it. I finished it now. This is like, I love it so much. Do you know which the, who are the two actors in the movie?
So the two actors are
the one that was Smith.
Justice Smith, yeah. He plays Owen, and Bridget Lundy Payne plays Maddie.
Wow, the girl who played Maddie.
Yeah.
Also, I love the fact that they set it in that 90s, like, depression era, like...
90s, like, early like 2000s?
So, the whole time I'm like, the fact that they're not, especially when it's a little bit later, like, there's no My Chemical Romance playing, feels like...
Did you see the director's movie that she made right before
one?
No. We're All Going to the World's Fair?
Yeah.
Fucking top-notch, dude. If you love this one...
I love it. Absolutely.
We're All Going to the World's Fair is... It's much more toned down because it's smaller, right? Okay. Before she got noticed, but this is what got her noticed.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, you'll like it. It's very good.
I mean, the way you saw it, like, 100%, like, if like, the director came to you today and had that way you described it, like, it's reality, it's all, like, their own, like... dealing with this world like through, like that 100% makes sense. Like it's not sometimes like people like have different takes on a movie and it's like I guess that could work, but it feels like a stretch. Like you're trying to get your agenda, your point of view, like what if it was actually like this, like what if like you know Groundhog Day was like this, like no it's like that. But no, I like I've never seen a movie more ambiguous that had a point.
Yeah.
Seen ambiguous movies, it's kind of like a splatter of like, I kind of want to talk about a lot of things, and I don't really know how to do that, so I'm just going to make a slice of life that kind of touches on all this stuff and lets you take what you want from it. This movie has a direct, it's saying the thing it wants to say. Like,
yeah, it definitely
depression
is.
And like either facing it, either knocking the stool out and just letting it happen, or changing your life. Whatever it is, this almost the worst possible path is what I know is what he's doing. This like in between.
Yeah.
Either.
Because he's so miserable.
Yeah. Misery's easy, you know? Yep. Death and change is hard. And that's what he went into. Yeah, you couldn't either way.
Yep.
Loved it. Fucking loved it.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
All right, you got one for me? I'm sorry.
I do. So, excuse me. I don't want to give the wrong impression that I dislike bad movies.
No, I've seen Night Beast.
Summer Camp. First of all, Night Beast is not a fucking bad movie. Night Beast is a fucking great movie.
Okay, right.
It's a fucking awesome movie. I watched it for my birthday this year.
I was trying to explain to someone a movie that we watched back on our other podcast about, and I couldn't remember the name of it, and to the point where it's like, I tried Googling it, but I forgot, like, you guys picked some obscure movies. Like, even, like, describing it through Google, like, I don't know what you're talking about. What was the movie where the cat that terrorized people on the boat was, like, a mute?
oh, shit. That's The Uninvited.
I kept saying Uncharted. I'm like, if it's not Uncharted, that's not how it is. I tried Googling, like, mutated cat escapes lab and terrorizes people on a yacht. You put that in there, Google's like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know what that, like, what movie that could possibly be. Okay.
So
I know you like bad movies, yes.
I actually have a huge love for bad movies.
Man, how are you doing?
Okay, like, and I don't mean, like, Summer Camp. Like, that's why I'm following it up with Summer Camp. Because Summer Camp was a fucking steaming pile of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just love really bad movies. Mm-hmm. And the one I want to put on people's list, because I think it's just perfect timing for this podcast to drop. Perfect timing for those that like to celebrate Shark Week.
Okay.
Under Paris.
Under
Paris by Xavier Jens. I think he's French. I'm going to say it wrong. Croissant. I'm going to say it fucking wrong because I'm American. Croissant.
Yeah, okay, first of all, that whole thing that lasted like a month where, like, British people were saying croissant wrong, like, the audacity, because British people say French words way wrong, way worse than we do. They say garage. It's garage. They say, like, all these, like, French words wrong. They pick the one word they say right. Also, watching British people say Spanish words...
Allow it, Matt. Allow it, Matt.
Watching them say guacamole and jalapeno and tortilla, jalapenos, guacamole, like them, watching them say anything, talking about Mexican foods from British people is my favorite thing to watch. It makes me realize they're idiots.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Just like Americans. They're Americans light. Americans light.
Yes. Right.
So, Under Paris. Dude, this movie is so fucking dumb. And I love it.
So it's sharks.
It's
under like the catacombs, right?
So if there is a moment, again, I was high when I saw this. If there is a moment where they explained why this shark is mutated, I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, you have this character. Her name is Sophia, who apparently is a shark specialist.
Yeah.
She starts following this female shark that's just like, hey, that's
Wait,
a bet. No, it's like a... Fuck, what is it? It's one of those ones that can switch between freshwater and saltwater.
An air shark?
Oh, fuck. Yeah. If any shark fans are listening to this...
I think it's an air shark.
No, it's Mako.
Mako?
I don't fucking know. It's a fucking shark.
Okay.
Okay? And so she's following this female shark, and she's like, hey, that one's a little different. I'm going to follow it. She follows it, right? And then I think her funding gets shut off, and she fucks off back to Paris, right?
Okay.
And so then... I don't want to say globalists, that's the wrong term. I'm sorry. These almost like client or climate change
activists
come in and they're like, hey, we know where your shark is. And she's like, what do you mean? They're like, we've been watching her. They're like, that's impossible. Nobody can follow our tracking device. They're like, look at this. And they pull out a laptop. Of course, they've hacked into the tracking device.
Yeah, of course.
And this shark has somehow followed Sophia.
Why?
Back to Paris. Who the fuck knows?
Okay.
You don't get that. You don't, Matt. You don't get that. Don't question this movie, Matt.
Here's my real question. When she went back to Paris, did she take a boat the whole time, or did she fly?
The shark?
No, the human.
The human she flew.
So the shark followed... in the air. Plane's flying, it's like, I know where the plane's going.
The shark, they showed a brief map in the movie. The shark came from, like, I want to say, like, up by Alaska, and it came down around the tip of Africa, and it came all the way up into the canals in France, in Paris, okay? Because the movie is called Under Paris.
How close is Paris to the ocean?
It swam up the rivers and streams.
All right, fair
so,
enough.
So it follows her back
I'm
there,
in
and,
on
the,
this.
And these.
Is it because the shark's in love? Because that's what it is.
That's what I thought.
As if it's a
that's
love
what
story.
You think, right? That's what you think. So the shark fucks off and comes to Paris, and like the lady's like, "How the fuck is it in Paris? It's gonna die in fresh water." And the climate activists are just like, "Oh fuck, it's gonna die in fresh water. We need to save it.
Need
to save it." Meanwhile, and this is such a Jaws ripoff, the mayor is like, "Hey, guess what? We're having a triathlon.
Love it. I love it.
And they're going to be swimming in the canals,
right, okay.
In the shithole canals full of French shit.
And
it's going to be wonderful. And I think Macron, President Macron, was supposed to swim in there, and everybody was going to take a shit while he was swimming in it.
Yeah.
Because French people like to shit when they protest.
Wasn't the shit just protest yesterday?
It might have been.
Yeah, it was
it might have been.
Yeah.
So anyways, so the mayor's just
they
like,
have a shtick.
The mayor's like, no, we're not calling this off, motherfucker.
No, it's one shark.
It's one shark. Who cares? It's triathlon. That's more important. It's going to put Paris on the map, right? Nobody knows where Paris is. Not a single fucking person knows where Paris is. I can't even tell you where.
The only Paris I know is Tom Paris from Voyager. The rest don't make any sense. or Paris from the Odyssey.
That's a second Star Trek reference.
I will make them all day long.
Meanwhile, the climate activists are just like, fuck, we got to save this. We got to save her. The shark somehow gets into the catacombs. It somehow gets into the catacombs. It has mutated to quadruple its size.
Okay.
And it's in the catacombs. And it's squirting out shark babies, like, left and right.
I mean, that's what you do.
And then there's a shark...
I have a question.
There's a shark slaughter in the catacombs.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Now, here's the thing. I know the catacombs. I've seen a couple people, like... Is there a part of the catacombs that is submerged? I thought it was like all just like walkways and stuff. Like,
no, I think part of it is because it's all under the city.
It's all
in the city. I don't know.
I'm in. I'm loving this.
French people, what's the deal with your catacombs?
Yeah, please reach out to us. I know we have. I think it's been a while since I checked our international like viewership, but I know we have over 300 French listeners. So I don't know. Yes, please reach out to us.
So. What I want to say is that I don't want to spoil it because a lot of this movie is...
Is it like Sharknado kind of like camp?
No, because it's treated more seriously.
Okay.
And that's the unfortunate side.
So is it like 47 meters deep or something like that? Like where it's like we're taking it serious, but it's like bananas.
We're taking it serious, but it's crap.
Yeah.
Okay. We're 47 meters deep, like the first one. It's actually pretty good. Yeah. So anyways, like the I'm not going to spoil it because I've seen a lot of complaints that the movie is pretty much a slog to get through, and I can see that. No. If you're telling me, Bob, like, this movie's just a pile of garbage, I can't sit through it, I understand that. Yeah. I just like bad movies, okay? Mm-hmm. Not summer camp. And the ending... I need a trilogy.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I need a trilogy because that ending is just like, it's great.
Okay.
It's great. And like, it, you don't really see it coming from the start. And it's just.
Cocaine Bear show up? Is that what happens?
Fuck. I wish Cocaine Bear showed up. I wish this shark was hopped up on cocaine.
All right.
French opium or something.
At any point, does a shark eat a mime?
No, it's such a fucking huge missed opportunity.
Oh, my God.
And this is coming from the director who directed Frontiers, which is one of the great French extremity horrors.
There we go. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm in on this. This was fantastic. God, okay, so, wow. All right.
Yeah, it's World Triathlon Championships being held in the shithole canals of Paris.
Do you think you do a triathlon?
No, fuck no. Are you fucking kidding me?
I think you had to.
No, I can barely walk, let alone jog.
Okay, let's say, like, a standard triathlon, which I believe is, I think it's 1.5 miles swimming, a marathon, and like 100 miles biking. Let's say I say, Bob, you have 2 years of training, and you get $100 million if you finish it. Do you think then you can do it?
No.
Nah, yeah, no. I don't think I can either. No. I don't think I can either. It'd be the marathon. I think it's swimming. I think it's bike it.
I would find some way to blame somebody for me failing.
That's classic Bob.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's your go-to move. No, all right. Okay. So, all right. So, that was underneath Paris, right?
Under Paris. It's a pile of garbage. If you're like me and you look forward to Shark Week here in the States on Discovery Channel or whatever the fuck streaming site it's on now, it's, you know, celebrated at the end of July,
yeah.
And it's just fun to watch great whites jump out of the fucking ocean, fly up, you know, 30 feet.
I love Shark Week.
Everybody loves Shark Week, but I because I love movies so much, I try to work in shark movies during Shark Week.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, under Paris.
I'm gonna do two real quick. One that was unbelievably terrible, so I get out of the way so people know I saw it. And I will shit on it a little bit, because you were shit on a movie. And then I want to talk about a movie I like. So just on pure principle, you know, I've not seen every comic movie of all time. I had to see how bad Mad Web was. And things I never saw Morbius, which people like said like you should actually watch because it's terrible, but it's kind of funny.
Morbius was terrible, funny.
And I kind of want to watch it now, because Mad Web is terrible and not funny. It is...
It's got Vampire Jesus.
Oh, and,
Morbius.
Yeah, yeah.
Vampire Jesus.
100%. No, I get that. And I love Matt Smith, so you think I'd watch it, you know,
He's a vampire dancing in sneakers.
I can watch it.
There's a scene where he's vampire dancing in sneakers.
I mean, hell, if I was a vampire, I'd be dancing in sneakers.
Yeah, exactly.
So I watched Mad Web. I'm going to spend maybe a total of a minute and 30 on this. It's not that it is that I was excited to a point. It's like, I don't like, one, Mad Web is not a character you should make comic books about. Or movies about. She's not a character. I understand that now, and the version they did was the new Mad Web, which is Julie Carpenter, the second Spider-Woman, actually the third Spider-Woman. And I actually like that character quite because I watched Forceworks, Red Forceworks. I watched the Iron Man show with Ted Forceworks.
Yeah.
So I'm aware of that. Really, but out of all the Spider-Woman is the dumbest one. The psychic webbing and it's like that. But whatever, she dates Spider-Man. But I like, other than that, those two characters, I love all the Spider-Women characters. So much so that before I came out, my some friends were like, hey, how many Spider-Women are there? Like, oh, would you like to know? Because there's nine. There's nine different Spider-Women that's come out. And they were doing like two of my favorites. So I was kind of like, well, Sony fucks up all the time, but maybe I'll see some weird comics I wanted. So that's one. Two, I don't think I've ever seen a movie that, like, doesn't make sense more than this movie. And, like, also, the special effects are garbage. The voiceover ADR stuff is horrendous. Like it's bad. Like, watching their Motley match, like, watching... So I've always not liked Dakota Johnson. I never thought she was a good actress in anything I've ever seen. Ever.
What?
Name a movie that she's good in.
Suspiria?
I think she's the worst part of that movie by far.
Ugh.
By far. Like, I find that she's... But I liked her the more this way because you can see in the performance that she knows that this movie's bad.
Yeah.
Her line delivery is like a way that I was like basically saying, fuck you while I'm talking. I'm talking with someone else, but I'm telling you fuck off. And Ezekiel Sims is a weird character to be the villain, and they don't even use him right. Like oh.
What villain does he play?
He plays the main villain. Like, instead of like hunting down and doing what he does, he wants spider powers himself. They kind of go a little more of the totem aspect in the web of life a little bit. And like, and you get to see Sydney Sweeney for a second, cause, and she plays, so she plays Jessica Drew, but she wears the Julie Carpenter costume, mostly because it's the hottest of all the costumes.
Yeah.
They're in the costumes for maybe 3.5 minutes at the end of the
movie. At the very end, right?
It is, I know a lot of people talk about bad it is, but it's like unwatchable. I was like scrolling my finger, like, all right, we'll stop here. Like, it's got Ben Scott, it's got Adam Scott, Ben Wyatt from like even he has Uncle Ben. Which I don't get. Like it was so hard. There were so many references. There's so many experiment characters that I like. And they did none of them right. Like, it was like, hey, give me, like, 15 of your most obscure but favorite Spider-Man characters. Like, okay, I love Arachnia. I like Jessica Drew. I like Uncle Ben. I like Ezekiel Sims. He's a weird character. I think it's really cool. The total life. Okay, we're going to take those characters, and we're doing them all wrong. And not even, like, a little bit wrong. Like, that doesn't make any sense. In the opening scene, her mom, like before she's born, is looking for a Spider-Man, basically a spider that gives people Spider-Man powers. In the Peruvian jungle. And a bunch of like warriors come out and fly down like they're like, it's crushed like you're a dragon at some point. It's fucking terrible. So I'm not going to go into too much, except that it's the worst thing I've seen all year, like by a lot. A lot. So that was it. Bad one. I did see that. But a movie I was trying to think of a movie that I liked that I didn't think I was going to like. I feel like this is my message of this year. There was a lot of movies. I'm like, okay, it's fine. There was a couple that I liked. I was excited for it and it didn't happen. But I'm trying to think of any of my list. Oh, you know what? You got my list over there. I'm trying to think of any ones that... Okay, one I liked that I think he's got such mixed reviews for me personally is going to be Driveway Dolls, which I watched today. Did you watch Driveway Dolls?
No. No, I haven't seen it.
It's a Coen Brothers movie, but it's really just the one. It is by far one of the gayest movies I've seen all year. It's like all about...
What? None of that.
Yeah. It's about this... It's set in the 90s. It's about these two friends. They're both lesbians, and they're going to take a road trip because like, one's just unhappy. One gets in and breaks up with a girl, her girlfriend, and they're going to do what's driving, which is a term I never heard before, but maybe... I didn't Google it to make sure what it... Maybe this was a thing that happened in the 80s and 70s and 80s and 90s before, like... It is if you wanted a car sent somewhere else, you could go to this company and they would get someone to drive. You would drive your car. Like you actually give them money and you would drive that car to this location, so you would have free transport. And then like that was the trend. Like, oh, here I'm. They want to drive from like I think it's Massachusetts to Tallahassee. And this company goes. They come and they pay them. They somehow go sign up for this service, and they get to drive this car. And like so you're the things to watch. You're gonna pay. You don't pay them. I don't know if that's a real thing or not, but it sounds like it should be. I don't know. Like, if you want to transport a car, yeah, I'll drive for you for like I think you pay like $250 for that.
Sure.
And they get, and then because they're going, they want to go there anyway. Whatever. It's this weird thing. This is a Coen Brothers shit, where like someone calls us, hey, I want to take my car to get driveway, and my people are gonna come get it driveway. They're just go through you, like a day later, to Tallahassee, and then they just have walking like a minute later and go, hey, we're going to Tallahassee. And he was like, oh, that's supposed to be the guys. Because he wasn't paying attention to the phone call. And in there, there's a briefcase, whatever's in there. And they realize that, like, oh, the guy, like, gave away, goes, oh, no, we need to find it. Because, like, the beginning of the movie is Pedro Pascal in this bar, like, holding onto this, like, briefcase. And, like, he walks away because the person he never shows up. And this guy kills him by, like, pushing his eyes through, like, kills this guy. And it's, like, so we know it's something big. There's a lot of, like, tons of like lesbian 90s gay references. It's mostly about these girls are trying to get laid because one hasn't got like, and they're like this weird road trip, and why they're being trailed by these two gangsters, right? Pedro Pascal's in it, and Matt Damon's in it, and
Jeez.
Domingos, I forget his name, he's in a bunch of stuff. He just got away for an Oscar this year. He's in a bunch of stuff. He's great, and he's in it. And, like, this is this weird, like, it's a very Coen-esque kind of thing.
Okay.
It's over, like, 4 days. There was one day they decided to be a road trip. You know, see weird stuff like that. It's bananas. I'm going to say 1, 2, 3 spoilers. I don't think you're going to watch this. And I want to, I feel like,
yeah.
Like, I want to tell you what's, because, like, it went from being, like, I guess this is kind of funny. It's not, a, like, it's not, a, it's a, it seems like very, like dick humor. Like, that kind of, like, this gross okay. type humor. That's a great scene, because the girl from, her name, but she's from Booksmart, and she's Jonah Hill's sister. She's been a bunch of stuff like that.
Okay.
She's the girlfriend that gets dumped, and like, cause her girlfriend cheated on her, and like, there's this great scene where she's trying to break up with her, and like, give all her stuff, and they have a wall-mounted dildo. She's trying to undo with screws to give back. She says, "No, it was a gift. I wanted you to keep this." No, for now, you're saying, "I don't know." There's like scenes like that that are very funny. What is in this briefcase? Is 5 dildos. They're all, and the story is like, what I'm trying to find is like. There's a woman who used to go around in the 80s and 70s who would make plasters of people's dicks that they fucked.
And the Plaster Caster.
That's what's in it. That's the
Kiss song.
Yes.
Plaster Caster. She lived in Chicago. She just died recently.
So we're talking, that's the whole idea. But like at some point, like had done some very famous people, and there's like, I guess, a market out there for like dildos or shave their famous dicks. And one is this senator who's running for president, played by Matt Damon, is trying to get back his cock. Is what it is. It's kind of funny. It's bananas. I went in thinking this because it has like a 63% Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score is like 30, which you don't usually see it that way. I liked it. I fucking liked it. It's like, it's an hour and like 28 minutes. It's not long. It's funny. It's it's supposed to be silly. It's got a lot of lesbian references, a lot of like, just like, like, switch to like the very end, because I realized they must have had a title for the movie. They wouldn't let go, because at the very end of the movie, it says Driveway Dolls. And like a car goes by, and it's written like graffiti on a wall. Like a scrolls on and changes to Driveway Dykes. And they use that phrase a ton in that movie. Like a lot. So they must have like had to like change it for the studio. But I liked it. I like Driveway Dolls. I like the two actors who are in it. They're funny. But it's a very, like, it's a very just. Okay. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was much better than I thought it was. I was like, oh, man, the score is bad. I want to go look at all of the Coen Brothers movies. I bet there's a few, like the Buster Scruggs, like a lot of the movies that, like, they always get good reviews.
Right.
I wonder if, like, audiences are, like, Oh, Brother World, though. I don't remember, like, ever loving that. Like, I remember, like, critics loved it, and the people loved the soundtrack. And I wonder if there's, like, they have several movies where, like, the critics like it more than the audiences. I can see them being the people that do that.
No, I can definitely see that, too.
Okay, so, yeah, We got time for like one or two of each more, and then we'll pause for part two.
Yeah, I'll do two quick ones here real fast. So, speaking of gay movies, The Bike Riders. All right, The Bike Riders. I really enjoyed The Bike Riders. I remember when I first saw the trailer. I know it was hampered by COVID. I because I'm not part of the movie industry, I don't understand how movies are still affected by COVID. Like, if you shot it during COVID, shouldn't have been released right away, but they released it, you know, recently. I've heard it compared to Goodfellas on motorcycles.
Oh.
But, you know, basically it stars Dreamy Austin Butler and Dreamy Tom Hardy.
I'm in.
Oh,
is this the motorcycle movie?
It's the motorcycle movie.
Oh, is it called Bike Riders?
It's called Bike Riders, and it's about Tom Hardy starting
I want to see this one,
The Vandals down in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
The standout star, I have to point her out, is Jodie Comer.
I love Jodie Comer.
She is phenomenal.
Did you watch Killian?
No. With her exaggerated Chicago accent. It's so exaggerated, but she's so just delightful when she's speaking and delivering it that it's, and she's the one that gets hooked up with Austin Butler as he's like, no, I need this motorcycle club in my life. But it's also, and there's a lot of people are really like, well, it's not a gay movie. No, there's a scene.
I was like, how's this a gay movie?
There's a scene. Because it's like this love triangle.
Motorcycles in general are pretty gay.
But yeah, it's like this love triangle between the three of them. And like, Jodie Comer has this she has this argument with Tom Hardy where she's like, she specifically says, you can't have him. You cannot have him. And like, Austin Butler sort of gets like caught into this argument between the three of them where he just fucks off. It's also very reflective, too, on the Vietnam War, because the Vandals started out, like, according to this movie, the Vandals started out as just, like, a racing club.
Okay.
And he's like, I'm going to turn it into Motorcycle Club. And then they expanded to Milwaukee and Indiana and whatnot. And it, you get this transition of the post-Nam era where all of these guys were coming back so fucked up from the violence and the drugs that they were doing. They needed an outlet. So they joined the Vandals, which was like, you know, more of like a mafia that was very close-knit. And it just escalates. They don't really follow the rules. They
go from outlaws to being anarchists, basically.
Basically, yeah. Okay. No, thank you. That's perfect.
Because that's the idea. Like a lot of those mafia ones, like, there's rules.
Yeah.
And it's always like some asshole comes up, no, fuck rules. We're outlaws. We do what we want, you know?
Yeah. So, and then it gets out of hand. And
it does.
It's not exactly a happy movie. Which I appreciate. Yeah. I really like more of the bleaker, sadder movies.
I didn't realize it was based on the Vandals.
Yeah.
I just thought it was like a bike movie. Like.
No, it's inspired by a photography book. This is the second time I'm bringing up photography
you and
book.
You and photography, man.
Because it's about.
You and your photography.
Yeah, me and my gay photography.
Yeah, no, photography
in there was a guy, and I thought it was Hunter S. Thompson who followed around the Hells Angels, but it's not. This guy, he followed around the Vandals and he took photos of them, so it's based on this photo book,
okay. And
that's how they turned it into a movie. But I thought it was really good. I actually really enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it's like top tier movie of all time by any means, but like, you know, watching Sons of Anarchy, like I enjoy the whole motorcycle drama, and it was a good time.
I love Jodie Comer.
She was so good.
She needs to be like better, like. She's gotten really good opportunities because she won like multiple Golden Globes and Emmys for Killing Eve, which is still one of my favorite shows, even though it gets real messy by the end. But first three seasons are great. 4 and 5, I take her lead.
Yeah, yeah.
Which sometimes that's how it's hard to end stuff. But like she was like in that movie Last Duel with from Ridley Scott, which didn't do any money because it should have. Like it's got Damon Ben Affleck and Adam Driver, and so like that didn't help her career. Like because when you're drawn from TV to movies, you only give two or three shots. Look at Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. She had a few shots from Solo to the Terminator like that, and you fail, bye, go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then also was the one that she did that made a bunch of money was Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds. I was like, okay, but it's like, I want her to do well. I think she's an insanely talented actress. I want her to.
Definitely.
Yeah, she's fantastic. All right, so you got one more. Yeah,
so my other pick is going to be Exhuma. It's Exhuma. So it's a South Korean horror film that's currently available right now on Shudder. It's currently sitting at my favorite of the year right now. My favorite's always changing.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit long. It's a little bit long, but for the fans of The Wailing from
the
2010s.
Is that 2013 maybe?
It might be. Yeah. So I fucking adore The Wailing.
Yeah.
And this
you turned me on that. Well, years
this
ago.
One gets very close to The Wailing.
Really?
Because the whole
that is high praise.
The whole Korean shaman. Aspect of horror.
I like that.
It's fucking awesome. It's like an alternative, and
so it's like bit where like the priest makes the vampire work.
But
well,
it's like it's an alternative cultural view into like exorcism, where in the U.S. we get like fucking priests running around saving white girls from their virginity and shit like that, and
or you get Russell Crowe, who just wants the
or you get Russell Crowe, and
is that still
the exorcism?
Out?
Yeah. I saw it. Yeah,
the new one.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about it later, but yes.
Yeah. So Exhuma is fucking phenomenal.
Okay.
It's so good. So, like, the first hour, the main story gets wrapped up in the first hour.
Oh, okay.
And there's, like, another hour and a half to go.
Oh.
And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? What could be another hour and a half? It deals with a lot of the imperial colonization of Imperial Japan in the Korean Peninsula.
Okay.
Because it deals... Because they occupied it from, you know, I want to say 1910 to 1945 at the end of the war. So there's like a good 35 years where Japan was, you know, brutalizing the Korean Peninsula. So it deals with this trauma that's passed down from generation to generation. It deals with like possession, ghosts. It's fucking awesome. It is awesome.
What's
Shudder. Yeah. It also stars Choi Min-sik, who if you guys love Korean horror like the way I do, Choi Min-sik was the villain in I Saw the Devil.
Oh
yeah, the villain.
Oh, yeah, you sold me, man.
I Saw the Devil is so fucking good.
So fucking good.
It's one of the, it's easily one of the top Korean horror films of all
time. It's a movie that is, like, sometimes you, like, watch a movie again and it's better. And sometimes it's like, you see a movie, at least for me, when I saw the Devil, I saw a bunch of good horror movies. And, like, so I put, like, in that grouping. But other movies have gotten, like, not as good, like diminished in quality to my point. That just stays there.
Yeah.
It's not, like, it's just as good as the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
I think I've seen, like, 3 times at this point now, and it's...
Yeah. No, it's phenomenal. But he plays a geomancer. So he plays this guy, and I'll make it really short here. I'm sorry, to keep going. But he plays this geomancer who's looking for good plots of land, right?
Yeah.
So he's trying to find, like, all these plots of land that allows the dead to rest peacefully.
Okay.
And his job is becoming very hard because they don't have the whole Korean peninsula anymore. It's split.
It's been
split since 45. And also at the same time, like, he knows where there's bad plots of land. And then comes in this shaman who works with her partner, who is covered in tattoos, Buddhist symbol tattoos, I believe, is what they say in the movie, I believe. And they basically determine, like, this is called, it's called the Grave's Calling.
Okay.
And it basically, an ancestor is very upset, still in the grave, so they traumatize the generation. And that ancestor is what's tied into the Japanese imperial occupation. And so they're trying to settle him. They're trying to settle him, but they keep digging.
Okay.
They keep digging. And so it's about trying to put to rest, like, the trauma and trying to come to terms with the trauma.
Because
they're like, we can't, there's no way for us to completely stop it. Mm-hmm. But we might be able to distract it.
Okay.
And it's so fucking good. It's so fucking good. I absolutely love it. So Exuma on Shudder, please, please, please watch it because it's underrated.
I'm gonna watch that tonight. To be honest, yeah. Wow, that sounds really. I mean, yeah. Okay, that is fantastic. Well, okay. This is, like I said, this is part one of part two. So we're gonna wrap this up real quick. So if you like us, you can please subscribe, rate, and view on wherever you find your podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars, we'll shout you out. The podcast itself, you can find that on Instagram at Better3D or 3D Better on X, which sounds so weird to say, instead of Twitter. As far as me personally, I'm Not That Maddie on Snapchat, Instagram, and X. I'm also Matt Green on Facebook. Paul is Paul Unger Draws on Instagram. Mike is Michael Detterman on everything now, and he's out there making moves. He's out there in the world making the moves.
He's making the big moves.
Yeah. Allison is Thistle_Wick, and that is on Twitter and Instagram. And Molly is Wimble Baggins on Instagram and TikTok. So that's where you find her. At the very least, you should tell people where you find your Letterbox.
Look up my name, Bob McQueen.
Oh,
I'm on Letterbox.
There we go.
That's I'm always on Letterbox, always. Like, every single day, almost.
Between your sessions of pornography.
Who else is going to watch Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls?
Just you.
Just me? No, plenty of people.
Okay. So, until next time, you know, just keep watching those movies, and bye!